You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
We'll get to the weekly buffoonery with Francis Suarez and Joe Carollo and the police chief nonsense because there are updates to be had there. But before we do that, let's talk about this grift on Miami Beach with the 2 a.m. curfew. And you always say, you say all the time that wherever it is in Miami that you will find the bad stuff, just follow the real estate hustle. It's always a real estate hustle.
Yeah.
Where the little people get burned and you have just politicians behaving poorly. So what's happening with this 2 a.m. curfew on the liquor?
Yeah, especially when you have this effort to completely transform the economy of this entire little city here. And what it is it's a straw ballot item on this referendum. It's not binding per se, but what the politicians will do is say, if we get this tiny fraction of a percent of Miami Beach voters who will come out to vote in this off-year election, and we can claim that we have a majority here of these people or that we have some sort of mandate, they're going to act on that. And the question is whether or not all bars, but certain bars should stop serving liquor at 2 a.m. specifically on Ocean Drive in the so-called entertainment district, this 15 blocks that we are literally smack dab in the middle of right now. And under the guise of all sorts of nonsense that is just simply not true. It's disingenuous. The idea that this is going to help prevent crime, the idea that this is somehow going to increase revenue, that this is going to somehow save Miami Beach and its brand and Ocean Drive, it is the exact opposite of all of those things. It will reduce revenue. It will increase crime. It will transform Ocean Drive in the worst possible way, not preserve it, but probably turn it into another Sunny Isles, another condo canyon with towers up to the sky. This is 100% a real estate hustle. It also will cost the city businesses upwards of, I think, $230 million in revenue. And it costs the city over this is a year, by the way. This is annual. These are annual figures. It will cost the city over $70 million in tax revenue. It will cost 4,100 jobs. Let's back up, though. That lost tax revenue, that has to be made up somewhere. When this pandemic money runs out from the federal government, there's going to be major gaps in the city budget, exacerbated by the fact that they're not going to have revenue from these businesses that they effectively want to shut down while carving exemptions. And Gelber admitted this. He said the quiet part out loud. He's like, oh, no, we're going to still let the big hotels operate. We're going to carve out exemptions for them in the city. So the biggest players and the richest developers will get a carve out from this. It's just the small businesses in Ocean Drive we want to destroy. And why do they want to do that? There's two reasons. Number one is the real estate hustle. And the real estate hustle is being led by Phil Levine, the former mayor and a real estate huckster here in Miami Beach, a man who, while he was the mayor, helped facilitate hundreds of millions of dollars in so-called flood mitigation pumps. And where did he put them? He put them where he owns property, is where he put them. So he basically, this scheme as mayor was to inflate his private real estate portfolio. And now he's trying to do the same thing again.
Give this person's history to the people who do not know how it is that this man came into power and what he does with that power.
So Philip Levine is a multimillionaire, former friend of Jeffrey Epstein. He was in Jeffrey Epstein's little black book, his phone book. with 13 numbers and emails and addresses, including his driver, his housekeeper, his assistants, his home address, his business address, various emails. Phil was silent about that for a great many weeks until he was finally cornered. And his response was, I have no idea why Jeffrey Epstein has all of my information in his little black book. And you can surmise why. But the bottom line is this guy came into power on the coattails of the Clintons. He had a lot invested in the Clintons, and he thought that Hillary was going to be president and he was going to basically sail into the governor's mansion in the state of Florida and maybe someday, I don't know, get some kind of position in the Clinton administration. Maybe he would be ambassador to Jeffrey Epstein Island or the ambassador of Lolita Express. I don't know what he expected to do, but obviously it didn't go as expected. And nonetheless, he didn't realize the gravy train had derailed, and he still went ahead. I called him a magician because he made over $25 million of his own money disappear in this misguided effort to try to run for governor. And he lost I don't even think he won Miami-Dade County in the Democratic primary in August of 2018. But long story even longer, this guy has a lot of real estate interests. He is a very heavy hitter partner in his real estate interests, who he actually, when he was elected mayor of Miami Beach, a man who had, by the way, admittedly never even, I think, voted in a municipal election before, run successfully for mayor on the backs of his, or I should say on top of his millions and millions of dollars that he could invest in this race in a city of 100,000 people that he thought was going to be his entree into major duty politics. He failed at that despite spending tens of millions of dollars. And now he is fully invested in this real estate hustle, which is to basically intentionally blight Ocean Drive and then buy it for pennies on the dollar, so to speak, and then redevelop it as effectively a condo canyon, to the great detriment of the property value, to the great detriment of, put it to you this way, they're going to have to raise the taxes of all the businesses and all of the residents in the city of Miami Beach to make up for the lost revenue from this totally misguided attempt to make Phil Levine richer. So that's what you're really doing. You're going to vote as to whether or not to make Phil Levine and a bunch of millionaire and billionaire developers even richer by letting them take over and destroy Ocean Drive.
How is this on the ballot, and what do people listening to this need to do to prevent any of this in such a small city where this never gets prevented? And business owners here on South Beach are very scared.
What's so f***ed up about this is that this is a failure of the public sector. They are unfairly vilifying the private sector. You come and party at a business on Ocean Drive, inside a business, by and large, you're safe. They keep you protected. There is security. The second you go out onto Ocean Drive, it becomes a little bit dicier. But that's not the purview of the private business owners. That's the failure of the city and the police department. That's a failure of Dan Gelber. That's a failure of city manager Alina Hudak. That is a failure of Clements, the police chief. That is a failure of Mickey Steinberg, a failure of Ricky Ariola, a failure of Michael Gongora, a failure of Stephen Miner, a failure of Mark Simulian, a failure of David Richardson. These are the commissioners who have been failing to act to effectively police and secure the city property, the public property, to fail to protect the businesses, to fail to protect the residents, and to fail to protect our tourists in any other tourist town. Vegas, New Orleans, Bourbon Street, New York.
You protect the tourists. You got to protect the money.
You protect the tourists. They have a good time. They come back. They don't care what color the tourists are. They don't care what music they listen to. Miami Beach has attempted to institute over the years what I call backdoor Jim Crow laws, to basically send a message to tourists of color that you're not welcome here anymore. It hasn't worked. And now they're like, let's just burn the whole thing down then to keep black people from coming to Miami Beach. That's sort of the unspoken part of all this. But the reality is that there is no incentive to change the way in which they police this street. And that's really the problem. What's really the problem is that there is no civilian oversight or authority over these police departments. They are run by unions and by rank and file officers who do not even live in the city. They are not constituents. They are not taxpayers. And they hold communities that they don't live in hostage. And they do not want to reform. They do not want to find new ways of police. This is 15 blocks, Dan. How can they not police this road? How hard can it possibly? It is one block wide and it is 15 blocks long. It ends at South Point Park at Government Cut with a body of water, a Nikki Beach, and it ends at a dead end on 15th Street, and then has these little side streets, for crying out loud. They can figure it out. It just doesn't conform with militarization. It requires imagination. And that's what they don't want to do. They don't want to say, like, how can we create a more tourist-friendly, customer service, community-oriented system of and style of policing here? They don't want to do it. They want to sit in their cars, and they don't want to do the job.
You have some solutions that you've articulated here before. We will reiterate them in a moment. But to the question of what can the people listening do right now?
Vote no. Vote no. Just vote no. Send a message to these clowns. Mayor Gelber had a secret Zoom meeting in September last month with Alina Hudak, the city manager, himself, Mayor Levine convened over it, and a whole group of high level, very powerful millionaire and billionaire developers. I think virtually none of whom are currently invested in Ocean Drive. These are the guys who want to come in and buy it out after the city intentionally fails to secure and police it for the sake of its residents, its business owners, and its tourists. Usually you don't get a secret meeting like this. I always call these things conspiracies of convenience, which basically means everybody knows which side their tostada is buttered on, and they all act in their own self-interest. They don't have to get together in a dark, smoky room, right? Like a Dick Tracy movie or a James Bond movie and plot. Everybody knows their role, and they just play their part, and everybody gets rich. What happened here was they actually met via Zoom. They all got together, and Phil Levine convened like Big Boy Caprice, like Al Pacino in Dick Tracy, and said, this is how we're going to do it. And he did it with the mayor, and he did it with the city manager. They talked about creating a PAC, which I believe is unethical and illegal. And I love lawyers and mayors like Dan Gelber, who try to clean up the record after the fact. He's like, well, listen, I can't actually participate in a call about a PAC while he's actually in the middle of participating in a call about a PAC.
Now, we cannot talk about a PAC or things like that. That's not what Alina's allowed to talk about, and I really shouldn't be here talking about that with a city personnel.
And then he says, basically, I will do whatever it is you want to do, and anything you want to put on the ballot, I will get on the ballot.
What I would really love you to do is tell us what you need. Tell us what you need to reimagine the areas we know need to be reimagined. I will commit to you this. If our staff will be available, I believe that if you come up with an idea that you think might allow an adaptive reuse of something, we will want to hear it. And I commit to you this. If you want something on the ballot because it needs to be on the ballot, I'll put it on the ballot. I'll support Clear, and I'm prepared to do whatever we need to do and support any idea, even if it's not particularly popular. I know I'm among friends, but more importantly, I'm among committed folks.
That's what he says to them. So he's basically face down, ass up in this Zoom meeting going, lube optional, whatever you guys want to do. He said it loud and clear.
If we're going to do adaptive reuse, we need you to tell us what you want and how it works. And then I need Alina's staff to say whether that works for us. And that has to happen right now. And right now, there's a lot of capital who want to come to this city. We are very of great interest to the world right now. If Tom Mooney says it sure works with me, I will push to put it on the ballot, or you can put it on the ballot any forcefully without commission approval. And we will ask the residents to, we will tell them, if you want to change this, this is how you change it. But I'm convinced that you all are fully able to harness your genius, your resources, your imagination, and tell us what you would do to some of these blocks, what you think would work, and come up with the ideas, and we will promote them. We will promote them, and we will implement them, and we will set you loose.
So you ask, how do these things get on the ballot? It's because millionaire and billionaire developers want to put it on the ballot, and then people like Phil Levine, who have been basically finding ways to subsidize his own private real estate interest using taxpayer money, figures out how to do that.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
In the history of this city, what do you regard as the greatest of the real estate hustles?
Well, there's too many. I think the most kind of informative one here is Sunny Isles, which was a strip of motels with a lot of character, a lot of personality, but didn't generate a ton of revenue as the world started to change into more higher end developments and condos. And while nobody was looking in this small little municipality, I don't know that there's any press that covers Sunny Isles, to tell you the truth. They just very quietly and very corruptly created a condo canyon. They let developers come in and have their way with the entire city and created a wall that if you're driving through Sunny Isles right now, you would have no idea the Atlantic Ocean was there. There's virtually no parks, no green space, no public right-of-way or openings between Collins and the beach. They're all private. They basically privatized the city, privatized the beach. It's known as Little Moscow or Little Odessa, depending if you're from Russia or Ukraine. And they've created this whole weird world within Miami-Dade County where developers had their way. I think downtown Miami and Brickell are good examples of that, too. It was a blank canvas where the city could have said 20 years ago, we're going to create a master plan. We're going to have a vision. We're going to have some leadership here where we're going to say we have this blank slate. What can we do to create real quality of life, create parks? We had streets that were built for horse and buggies here in downtown Miami. You know, there's a little, you know, single lane, one way streets and everything. And like, how are we going to create infrastructure? How are we going to create a real modern city here? They didn't. They let every developer on every block build buildings on top of buildings. They sold people waterfront views, and then they built buildings blocking those waterfront views. There's no quality of life in Brickell. It's not safe for pedestrians or for bicyclists. You can only drive, but yet you can't get anywhere when you drive. And there is just a mess of a skyline. And developers came in and they paid development impact fees, saying, well, obviously we're going to come here and it's going to have some sort of impact on the community, so we're going to pay this fee to the city. Where did that money go? They didn't build a single fucking park. I can tell you that. They didn't do anything for quality of life. There's no school, new schools down there. There's just condos as far as the eye can see and as far in the sky as they can go. And nobody did anything to create any leadership or any vision. And that's what's happening here on Ocean Drive as well. There is a lack of vision and a lack of leadership. They are unable to control and transform policing into a modern and tourism-friendly way of doing so. And then they're just going to be like, okay, well, let's close the businesses down and build condos.
There's no getting around the way that this is meant, and you articulated some of it before, to get black and brown people out of here.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the actions that they've taken over the last 10, 15, 20 years have been pretty overt in that regard. I mean, they're programming for Memorial Day right now, and they have this diverse cross-section of artists and genres of music that they're talking about, pop and jazz and electronica, EDM, the list goes on. What do you think is absent from that? What genres of music? There is no hip hop and R&B that they're planning on programming on that list, which, by the way, has hip hop has made Miami Beach go round now for 20 years. And that's the thing to remember. There's a disconnect. We talk about this all the time between locals and Ocean Drive, right?
Well, tell people the history here as it relates to Memorial Day weekend and how much hip hop has influenced this area in ways that until they bring out the tanks and the fighter pilots and the police militarization, it's a pretty fun party that that's over the years had its bad moments, but the way the police are enforcing it now, it's as harsh and unpleasant as it's ever been. It's just the weekend you can't get anywhere because of how much, if they can't police this strip except when they want to.
Right. And then they do it in the worst possible way, the least welcoming way, the least community friendly way. They need to fix Ocean Drive. There's nobody's arguing that Ocean Drive that there aren't issues on Ocean Drive that need to be addressed. The problem is they have failed to address them. And instead of addressing them, because it's too hard to address them, they're just like, fuck it, burn it down and let's run a real estate scheme, which is more often than not what they do. The thing to remember is, though, is that this is, you know, I think about Liquid. Boy, that's a throwback, right?
The nightclub.
The nightclub Liquid, which was probably for a time the most famous nightclub
Madonna was there, and it had all of the intrigue. It was when this area was a nightclub town. Yeah. This is no longer a nightclub town. This is all the nightclubs are gone.
It was the biggest club during the renaissance of Miami Beach in the mid-1990s. And in the front room was electronic music, you know, electronica, techno, what appealed to the wealthy European tourists who started coming here chasing the models, because Ocean Drive, I mean, certainly per square foot, had the most attractive people in the world, female and male, on this street, because every single modeling agency in the world was here, had it block to block. It was extraordinary. It looked like Birdcage. And the extras are sort of in Speedos and bikinis rollerblading down. It looked like that. It was that absurd and beautiful. And in the back room was hip hop. And then that changed as American culture changed, as hip hop music and hip hop culture became American culture, that the big room was hip hop and the smaller room. Then the electronic music became like a niche thing until EDM blew up. You know, that kind of cycle played out 20 years later or played through. And I think about that a lot, because that's when you could argue that Miami Beach changed in many ways. It became a little bit more commercial. It wasn't just kind of rich people and celebrities looking to kind of party quietly and away from the prying eyes of the paparazzi in New York and LA, but it suddenly became a more, we'll say, mainstream experience through hip hop, because that was mainstream American culture at the time. And Miami Beach kind of lost its mind in many ways. And for years, during Memorial Day weekend, which became the hip hop weekend, this was a spontaneous grassroots thing by hip hop DJs all over the country in about 2000, 2001, who just said, hey, we're going to Miami Beach, we're going to South Beach for Memorial Day weekend. And that became a really fun and cool annual tradition. And Miami Beach, they f***ing melted down. They just didn't know what to do with it. They just had no idea. And so what they did was they militarized, they created a green zone, and they locked down the causeways with license plate readers. They locked down Ocean Drive. Instead of creating a pedestrian-friendly street, they just said, f*** it, we're just going to shut it down to traffic, which is a good idea conceptually, but they didn't execute it well, like everything else in this city. When they have a good idea, they still manage to screw it up. And that's what happened here. And over the years, then, there's become this disconnect between, I think, Miami-Dade County residents and Ocean Drive. I've joked about it before that if you live in Orlando, you don't go to Disney World every weekend, right? There's some things that are for the tourists and some things that are for the locals. So that's become the kind of arm's length relationship that I think residents in Miami Beach and in Dade County have with Ocean Drive. The reality is, though, the people who are here and work here, they are Miami Beach too. They might not necessarily be able to afford to live here. Some of them can afford to live in North Beach, but the people who work in the entertainment district, they are Miami Beach as much as any of the residents or any of the politicians or any of the developers are, because they actually work for Miami Beach, because the revenue that they generate, including significant revenue between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. at these establishments, it subsidizes Miami Beach. It keeps your property taxes low. It finances the police, for crying out loud. It pays for the police. So if you suddenly don't have this revenue anymore, everybody else is going to have to pay for it. And 4,100 jobs lost. You're literally taking food out of the mouths of children here, of people who come and work to keep your taxes low, people who come to work for the city of Miami Beach. And do you think the business owners on Ocean Drive don't want Ocean Drive to be safer? Don't want to curb crime, don't want to generate more revenue? It's everything that the other side claims they're trying to do disingenuously, okay, in pursuit of a real estate hustle to effectively make millionaires and billionaires richer on the backs of these poor and working class people. That's exactly what voting no will accomplish. It will hopefully focus the city on solving the actual problems.
Before we get to Francis Suarez, Joe Carollo, and the updates with the police chief, just reiterate for the people again, because you're not just complaining. You do have practical solutions. I don't know if anyone's listening, but you're not just whimpering and whining about things that are wrong and unjust. You have some pretty easy fixes, I think.
I don't want to say that they're easy, but these are the types of things you would at least try before you burn the whole damn thing down. in pursuit of a real estate hustle on behalf of rich people and put a bunch of poor people out of work, for crying out loud. The types of things you do is say, well, you look at Bourbon Street and you look at Times Square and you look at Las Vegas, who gets a lot more tourists than we do here in not quite as small an area, but they're all concentrated on the Strip. They all are. Where there's been overdevelopment and where there's, you know, there's no dearth of crime, but where they manage to create an experience that is hospitality oriented. They don't do that here. So what you do is you create a Lincoln Road out of Ocean Drive, meaning you beautify it as a walking street, not just, again, as a driving street that's just shut down to traffic. You create a promenade street experience. You kind of extend Lummis Park into it and make a park here. And then you have an area in which you can police, and you have an area in which you can make secure. You have an area in which you can have CCTV, and then you have to transform the way that the police operate. You need a Instagrammable deco substation for the Miami Police Department on Ocean Drive, like they have for the NYPD in Times Square. They have that really cool with the neon sign and the glass brick. And then they have officers there who are integrated seamlessly into the tourist experience, who are almost like the Beefeaters in London, you know, at the palace. You take a picture with the guards, you know, that kind of a thing. So you need new uniforms. You need hospitality training. You need CCTV. You need a different kind of policing in this 15 blocks.
Tell people what CCTV is.
Closed circuit TV. It means surveillance in the public areas. Mm-hmm. Okay, to identify and have people watching who can identify problematic people and behavior, and they can be approached in a civil and customer service friendly way by police officers who are in communication with people monitoring that. This is all very doable. You know, you look at Piccadilly in London. There are places that are more difficult to police than Ocean Drive that don't have the kind of f***ery that we have here. It's absolutely doable, but it requires the participation of the FOP, who are problematic in the city of Miami, who are problematic here in the city of Miami Beach, who do not have any incentive to change. Okay? And they don't listen either. If they decide it's too hot to go outside and put on shorts and patrol Ocean Drive, they'll just sit in their car and the union says, f*** them. That's fine. I don't know if they listen to the police chief. I don't know. They certainly don't listen to the civilian elected body that is supposed to be governing this town. And so there needs to be a different kind of relationship with the police, and the police need to, by the way, there are people who are receptive to this idea in the police. I think the union, by and large, is what's so obstinate. And I'm not certain exactly why we have a police union. They want to be called sergeants and lieutenants and captains and corporals and chiefs, but they don't seem to function in a following orders kind of a mode. They want to be this quasi-military organization, but they don't want to participate in the discipline necessary to be such an organization. So I think that there are people who are receptive to these ideas, but the government doesn't know how to do it. Alina Hudak, whose husband is Chief Hudak in Coral Gables, she was supposed to have kind of a better idea on how to channel policing into this, but she's failed. She's failed to do that so far. So this is on Alina Hudak. The blood of the tourists murdered on this street in broad daylight, mind you, not at 3 a.m., not at 2 a.m., but at 6:20 p.m. with the light still in the sky, getting executed, sitting outside on Ocean Drive, dining with his one-year-old child and his young wife. The blood is on the hands of this government, not on the private business owners that want Ocean Drive to be safe, but on the failures of the city government and the police department. And now they want to blame the private sector for it in a real estate hustle.
The Hudaks are sort of police royalty in this town. Are you saying or intimating that she simply failed or is in somehow in on the grift?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that she was on this call last month with the developers and with Mayor Gelber and Phil Levine, Jeffrey Epstein's buddy. I know that for a fact. How complicit she is in the real estate hustle remains to be seen. I do know that she has failed to even attempt to solve the problem in any of the logical ways in which I've just presented, and is skipping right to, let's shut these small businesses down. Let's stop liquor sales at 2 a.m., which, by the way, the idea that crime only occurs after 2 a.m. is utterly insane. And all that, by the way, this will just increase crime. Why? You've seen this in towns that have early last calls like this. They push everybody out onto the street. First things first is everybody stays to the bitter end. I don't go out till 5 a.m. You don't go out till 5 a.m. When there's a 5 a.m. closing time, there's staggered departures, right? Some people leave at midnight. Some people leave at 1. Some people leave at 2. Some people leave at 3. By and large, people don't stay out and party and drink till 5 a.m. But when you have a 2 a.m., people are in it to win it. People are like, screw it, I'm just going to stay till last call at 1:30, right? And then at 2 a.m., the fluorescents go on, or I should say 1:58 a.m., when they can't generate revenue anymore, they're not going to sell you bottled water, they literally turn on the lights and they shove everybody, drunk and belligerent and a little kind of upset that it's so early, out onto the street. And then what happens? 100% of the people are driving drunk, are fighting in the street, and just increases exactly what they claim that they want to decrease. But here's the thing. They don't want to solve the crime problem on Ocean Drive. It's intentional blight. They want to make it a problem. They want to continue to make it a problem so that they can come here and the owners will be like, whatever, I'll sell to you for pennies on the dollar, and you come in and just have your way with Ocean Drive.
What is the latest on the corrupt and contemptible Francis Suarez?
This has been a great, great response to our video, mostly from like the Bitcoin bros. And I'm like, first of all, if you were so comfortable and secure in your business model, you could handle a little satire, right? The problem is that, like, I understand, I've said this before, I respect the spirit and the vision of a decentralized, democratized currency. But that's not what Francis Suarez is doing. And it's these sleazy operators and these hustlers and these pump and dump schemes that give crypto in general a bad name. And so if people get defensive about it and turn it into a cult of crypto, it's not going to have a general and more broad appeal, which I think is a shame. So it almost, in a way, the community needs to self-police and put a spotlight on some of these scammier crypto enterprises, the crypto cowboys, if you will. Coming soon to Netflix, I have no doubt. But, oh man, what a disaster that was last week, huh?
The press conference. You bombarded the press conference. You grabbed the notes off. You're trying to do your muckraking journalism. They left their notes behind, and you grabbed them, and they were embarrassing.
Can we just agree that Francis Suarez is not too good at that? They're hiring. I mean, Francis Suarez is handpicked police chief, fired after 6 months. His first comms director, Rene Pedrosa, was arrested after molesting a teenage boy in City Hall next to the mayor's office. And now his new comms director, this incompetent Soledad Cedro, leaves the mayor's notes printed and handwritten right on the lectern after the press conference. Who doesn't fold up their notes and put them in their inside jacket pocket? Number one. Number two, when you have an entire entourage financed by the taxpayers, shouldn't somebody be competent enough to snatch those off the lectern? Instead,
all right,
they left it to me.
But you got them.
I got them.
And what happened?
Well,
what did it reveal?
It revealed that what we all knew is that Mayor Ponzi Postalita is a yutz. He doesn't have good answers to a lot of the good questions that the press isn't asking, by the way. I haven't attended a lot of press conferences in my time, but I will tell you, part of the reason why we're in this mess is because the local press has not served as the institutional memory that we require.
You had the intent of getting in there. It was a big scrum and there were a lot of people, and you had a question.
I had a question
for him.
I had a question.
And the question was?
The question was, Joe Carollo, a commissioner elected in a single district, won by 230 votes, is, as we stand here today, the de facto strong mayor, the de facto police chief, the city manager, the city attorney, the commission chair, the director of code enforcement. He runs the city and everyone answers to him. Other than sell imaginary coins, what is it that you do here, sir? What is your job, Mr. Mayor? That was my question. And that's a question, believe you me, he does not want to have to answer. If he had weeks to think of an answer, he couldn't think of it. He's had weeks to think of answers to these questions about Acevedo, his hand-picked police chief, the Tom Brady and Michael Jordan of police chiefs, getting fired after I call him the Ozzie Guillen of police chiefs, because he wasn't fired for any incompetence on the job. He was fired for pissing off a group of people
For saying the Cuban mafia of an institution that appears to be behaving like the Cuban mafia and just got him fired like a Cuban mafia.
For all of the dog and pony show of these hearings and these quasi-judicial proceedings and all this nonsense, Acevedo, and I don't have to defend this guy's record either. I don't know that I know that much about him in his record, but the fact pattern here is very simple. He did not get fired because he was a bad police chief in California, which was a record that Joe Carollo went over ad nauseum. He was not fired because he was a bad police chief in Texas, and he was not fired because he was a bad police chief in Florida. He was fired because he came here, he saw corruption and chicanery, he called it out, and the Miami Mafia didn't like it. And Francis Suarez, Mayor Ponzi Postalita, his handpicked guy, said, "That's all good with me, bro. Acevedo is the past, crypto is the future, whatever. I'm doing my own thing." That's the thing. Francis Suarez has checked the f*** out. Francis Suarez has not fulfilled a single campaign promise in his first term. 4 years ago, he ran on affordable housing, mitigating sea level rise, decreasing the income gap, reforming the police department. The only thing he succeeded on doing is eliminating or helping to eliminate red light cameras, which I think is a good thing. But that's the only thing he accomplished. Everything else he ran on, homelessness, affordable housing, nothing, none of that. What's happening now? 4 years ago, he ran on save Miami. Now he's running on screw Miami. Because everything he has done for this city has destroyed the quality of life and the opportunities for the people who actually live here. He is the mayor for everybody else who does not live here. He's the mayor for people he wants to bring here tomorrow to effectively destroy the quality of life, raise the rent on everybody, and create what jobs? More service industry jobs? More jobs for people who can't afford to live in the city of Miami anymore? He's done nothing for the people of the city of Miami, and they're about to reelect him by an outstanding margin. Because in a democracy, the people get the government they deserve. But the reality is this guy's a fraud and a con man, and people are absolutely unquestionably buying his bullshit, just like they're about to buy Joe Carollo's bullshit, too.
What's the update there?
Joe Carollo has been exploiting the generational trauma of the Cuban exile community. He has been putting his foot into the rifts between the tribes and the racial groups in this community for decades, and has been tearing the city apart successfully in order to kowtow to a tiny but powerful voting bloc of right-wing extremists, the kind of people that made Miami the domestic terror capital of the United States from the 60s through the 90s, actually arguably early zeros, where cigar shops were being bombed, post offices were being bombed, radio stations were being bombed, creating that kind of chilling effect on free speech, that kind of chilling effect on dissension, on any dissension at all. What a communist dictator would do through threats and intimidation, and in some cases, violence. Joe Carollo, a man who supported segregationist George Wallace for president and was fired from the Metro-Dade Police Department, now Miami-Dade Police Department, before he resigned, before he could be fired for placing a KKK parody ad into the mailboxes of black police officers. This man sat on the dais during a city commission meeting and defended a Proud Boy, member of a white nationalist hate group. He defended him, a man who confronted Police Chief Acevedo during the protests earlier this year for freedom in Cuba, and a man who was yelling at him that he was a communist. And he used the F word. If I had pearls, I would be clutching them right now, offending the dignity, apparently, of the uniform or whatever nonsense they said. This from Joe Carollo, a man who offends the dignity of his office and of Miami City Hall every single time he opens his mouth on the dais, a wife beater and a racist and a demagogue and a wannabe tin pot dictator. This guy is saying that you shouldn't say the F word to a Proud Boy. And he says, "I don't know if he's a Pride Boy." That's what he called him, or a Native American, or Antifa, or Black Lives Matter. "I know he's a Marine veteran." It's like, well, wait a second. I thought he was going to make the point of, I don't care who the guy is, the police chief should behave in a civil and professional manner when in uniform. But no, the point was, I'm going to defend this racist hate group member. But those are Joe's kind of people. He likes the jackboots guys. He likes the brown shirt guys. He likes the secret police guys. It's like I told you, if Joe Carollo stayed in Cuba, he would have been Fidel Castro's right-hand man. He would have been the head of the secret police. He would have been out there beating dissenters on the street. This is a man who calls peaceful, progressive protesters, he calls them agitators, And you'll recall the police chief in his bombshell 8-page memo accusing Joe Carollo, Alex Diaz de la Portilla, Manolo Reyes, three sitting city commissioners of corruption. He said, I want these guys arrested. He tried to use the police department as his own secret police to arrest peaceful protesters that he called agitators.
This is not new, though. We've covered all this ground before, all of it, I think. What's the newest on Carollo?
The newest on Carollo is that, as we know, he's running for re-election.
And he's won, right? He won this. This is a victory for him to be able to do this in plain sight, knock out the police chief when the police chief was just doing the police chief's job.
Fabiola Santiago said in several columns the past several weeks, which have been outstanding, by the way, in the Miami Herald, she said that this mayor, who was supposed to help us shed our Banana Republic image, this is her quote, instead allowed a third world coup of the Miami Police Department by Joe Carollo, allowed it to happen. And she's absolutely right about that. And this is a major success for Joe Carollo. It's what I've been saying all along, which is that he is actually the man who runs the city.
I don't know, Billy, whether I'm more hurt, angry, embarrassed to see all of that play out in a city that I love.
And on an international stage. Oh, it's been covered by everyone.
It's just embarrassing. But also scary. I don't know what the chief feeling is that all of a sudden the police chief is gone and gone for doing his job.
I think fear is an accurate feeling. And again, they relied heavily on the FOP. They relied on a fraction of the FOP's membership who gave the police chief a vote of no confidence. But less than 7% of the police force live in the city of Miami. Who cares what they think? Not a lot of people, present company excluded, like their bosses. You're not supposed to like your boss. He's supposed to hold you accountable and discipline you, especially in a quasi-military organization such as a police department. Who cares what they think, with all due respect? I just don't understand why they grant them so much authority over who their commanding officers are. And then there was commanding officers at this meeting who were offended that a female assistant chief who was brought in from Houston by Acevedo, she had her job defunded for the second time by the city commission. Allegedly, she called a bunch of these majors and commanders. She said, you're all a bunch of pussies. Go f*** yourselves. She was in plain clothes. She had been fired for the second time by the city commission, who defunded the police, defunded her position. These law and order Republicans defunding the police. And they claimed that Art Acevedo didn't do anything about it. They were so offended by her language, her calling them a pussies and dropping F-bombs. They were so offended. Such pearl clutchers. They were so offended that Art Acevedo didn't intervene. What was Art Acevedo supposed to do? Fire her a third time? How's he going to discipline her? She just got fired a second time. What's he supposed to say? She was pissed, and these snowflakes couldn't handle her language. By the way, she was right. Her opinion, her assessment was 100% accurate. They threw this woman right under the bus, a woman who uprooted her life from Houston to come to Miami to help reform a police department that clearly didn't want to be reformed.
It has to be maddening to her and Acevedo to come down here, do their jobs well, ostensibly.
Yeah. And doing what they thought they were supposed to
do. And be disgraced. And they must look around and be like, am I taking crazy pills? Like, how is any of this okay?
The Miami Mafia is undefeated. They joined a cartel, but they didn't know they were joining a cartel. I said this, you live by the cartel, you die by the cartel. That's what happened here. That's not the police department that I'm referring to, by the way. That's the city of Miami government is what it is. It's a criminal enterprise. It is a racketeering organization, and someone needs to put a stop to it. And apparently we're the only ones who appear to give a shit.
Mike, speaking of which, of only people who appear to give a shit, you can go ahead and have 3 minutes of conversation with Billy Corbin to close out the local hour here, because I don't know, I'm uncomfortable when you guys get near each other and a conversation about the University of Miami football program breaks out.
Has Billy Corbin done anything in that regard? No, he's just talking shit, making memes. Okay, I'm done here. I'll waste my time with him. Player hidden from the sidelines. Doesn't want to get in the game.
You're the Golden Kane.
Yeah.
You're the Golden Kane.
No, I'm actually doing shit. You're just...
What are you doing?
Sitting out there just creating content and making Twitter followers laugh. I'm out here in these streets actually trying to bring about change.
What streets?
No, you're a waste of time. You're wasting my time. You're a waste of my time. What I'm doing right now is actually changing shit. I'm literally right now working it. You're just trying to crack jokes, and I realized a couple of weeks ago, you're not worth my time in this regard.
You were doing nothing.
My words on this are valuable. My information is good.
You were doing nothing about this.
Nothing.
You were doing nothing about this.
You
were effectuating zero change about this.
Nothing. I would rather entertain a message boarder on like canesinside.com because it would be a better use of my time in this regard. I'm serious. I'm not doing a bit. I'm turning off my mic and I'm doing something else. Bye.
Jesus.
An excellent ending. He shut you down, Corbin, and you never get shut down.
I said it once. I'll say it again. Manny Diaz Jr. is doing to the Miami Hurricanes what Manny Diaz Sr. did to the Orange Bowl.
He's furious about you cracking jokes all the time. You got solutions for everything except the UM program. You got solutions for policing, for racism, for politics, for corruption. But
I just heard Billy Corbin diarrhea mouth for 40 minutes solving every problem known to Miami Beach. But all he wants to do is put out a meme about the University of Miami when he went to this school. He's a waste of time. Bye, Billy.
Jesus, dude. Jesus. I've solved the problem already, which is they're not going to do anything about it. You need to stop giving a shit.
Yeah, which is what they tell you when you're
energy.
But you go to City Hall. Yeah. I'm sure you've been told about the legacy Cuban mafia for years, but you're out here trying to do something about it, yet I can't trouble you for a goddamn donation.
That's
you're
the public sector.
You are an enemy of the University of Miami.
I'm going to donate.
You are not an ally. You are the problem with this goddamn fan base. You just talk your shit, and you don't do anything about it. It's something that could actually help here. You actually have a say in how this program is shaped, yet you just want to crack jokes and laugh with your friends and point from the sidelines and saying, oh, that's their problem and it's never going to get fixed. Virtue signaling. Virtue signaling.
I think it's the opposite of virtue signaling. It's like douchebag signaling a little bit, I'll admit.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad you called it what it is.
But
waste of my time. I'm turning off my mic again. Bye.
Nobody else has created content that has driven more recruits to the school in the last 20 years.
The bona fide.
We're number 59 right now, partner. What are you doing right now?
No,
jack shit is what you're doing.
What am I going to do?
I'm going to make a documentary. It's called Jack Shit, the Billy Corbin Miami story.
The U part three. What am I going to do that about?
It's going to be
the Golden Canes.
I think it should be about
turn my mic off. I'm not talking to you anymore.
You said that four times.
Vert you. Signaling. I think that's the name of the next movie. There's a U right there between the vert and the signaling. You're absolutely right, Mike. He deserves you to drag him with all his with all his joke making. We'll talk to
Miami
you.
Miami coin. I'm donating Miami coin.
That's not right. More jokes. Donate. Donate some of your passion.
That's all he's got. One trick pony. Turn my mic off.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.